Hello and welcome from the back of the brink of our podcasting sojourn into nothingness. I am Michael White here of what's I'm tentatively calling the With Onion Soccer Podcast, previously known as Two Dudes, One Ball. Sadly, I regret to inform you that my co-host and co-gunner hater Ryan Brown, at RyanMB30 on the tweet machine, we have gone our separate ways. We've both agreed that while Vancouver is best placed in the middle of a bonfire, we have differentiated on which Vancouver, whether it is pretty BC or, hey, look at us, Portland, the one in Washington, was most deserving. Sadly, we could not rectify and come to a common agreement. But here to provide me some semi-professional analysis on what we've been missing in the 2 months we've been gone, and other things to come, is my good friend, the self-deprecating meme generator herself, Gwyn DeFries.
Hi!
At Gwynny Pig on the tweet. How do you spell that?
G-W-Y-N-N-I-E-P-E-G.
Excellent. Okay. So feel free to follow her, or follow me like 6 or 8 more times than you follow her, because she has like triple my amount of followers.
I also follow more people than you, I think.
That's probably true.
Besides,
I think like 250.
I also have people like Little Mix following me, so...
Little Mix?
Yeah, the English girl group. Their song is in the ad for the Olympics. The one with all the okay. US women in it.
Well, that's a similar topic. I love when we have a major competition like Euro or World Cup. I hate it that they condense a really bad song into 3.5 seconds. Like that they were doing for Euro. And you have to hear that at the beginning of the, from commercial break all the way to the end.
You mean you didn't enjoy hearing Pitbull go in every single Copa match?
Did I miss that?
Yeah.
Was I on drugs in June? I have no idea. Yeah, screw that guy. There was a campaign a couple years ago to get Pitbull, like, it was a Bud Light thing. He'll play in your hometown, so they were trying to get him to the most secluded, fuck-off, worthless place. It was like a Walmart in Alaska, I think it was. But they didn't win.
Oh.
It was like Barrow. My Alaska-born wife is giving me a dirty look from afar. Hi, that's at @cookie_ray on the Twitter if you want to.
If you follow her, it will take at least a year to follow you back.
Gwyn can speak from experience. What do I have to do? I have to tell you that I am at Michael L. White on Twitter. Please follow me. I'm very, very, almost
lovely
a nice
man.
Person. So we are back. We're going to be talking a lot of big news here on this Thursday evening, July 14th. Meg Linehan of Excel Sports. I think everybody probably follows her. Big article about NWSL 2.0.
She wrote for somebody else beforehand, didn't she?
Was she at Stars and Stripes for SB Nation? With Thrace, or was that just Thrace?
I can't remember now, but yeah. I feel like she's been around for longer than I've seen XL Sports out in the range.
Yeah, I only found out about XL Sports, the Keeper Notes, was it Meg Cooper, the Houston Dash color analyst, had an interview with their head guy, Howard Megdahl. Kind of an interesting listen, but kind of not, because he's the only guy at the organization. Yeah, bring on the guy to talk about the women's... There we go. So as we'll talk about anything we want to about women's national team roster, probably Pino. Screw you, Pino.
The lovely, lovely open letter from everybody's favorite goalkeeper.
Hope fucking Solo. The letter written like a bad EXO Jane article, even if the points were extremely valid.
She had very valid points when not questioning that bit.
And of course, I suppose we'll talk about Pews deferring her UCAL. I can't spell UCLA. I have dyslexia all of a sudden. Her enrollment till January, probably for various reasons. And whatever else thorns are related comes in the top of our skull. I even made, I'll have to post the picture. Our good friend Gwyn is a great friend, and we all have our problems. My problems are talking about everything and trying to convince people into other sports, but I made her a check mark. If she talks too much off topic about her favorite teams, Arsenal, Bayern, or Valencia, we're going to get at it, as well as maybe Arsene Wenger, or Mustafi, Hummels, maybe Neville, even though he's a terrible coach, and Müller. I will say one thing. Everything is better with umlauts. Absolutely everything.
But well, it entirely changes the pronunciation. Like, it really bugs me when people don't put it on Özil, because then it is Ozil.
Yeah. Those English announcers are the worst. And on the American side, you know, we have Becky Sauerbrunn, or Becky Zadebin, if you want to really enjoy it. But everyone's, you know, when she talked during a game, yeah. It's Braun. It's Bronn. Bronn's New England. That sounds like short for Bronwyn or something.
Hodan versus Hodan.
Yeah. I think all of us had a drunk conversation after the game. Is it her? I'm confused, man.
She has clarified. She took to Twitter to clarify for us.
It's awesome.
At least it's pretty hard to mess up Sonnet's last name, although people do misspell it a lot.
That's true.
Double T.
That's something we should talk about towards the end is, are there any women's soccer players worth a damn to actually follow for consistent content? We'll have to get to that later, because I still have yet to find one in the 20 or 30 people I follow.
It's not necessarily important content, but if you want consistent humor, Hayley Kopmeyer's pretty good.
We'll have to look her up, yeah.
Backup keep for Vane.
All right, so first thing first, the XL Sports article, Meg Linehan, they're one of the new entity, but some good writings, NWSL 2.0. Main points that I took from all of it were, what happens with the growth of the league? Do they keep, you know, we've had some great tweets and articles with Midfield Press about the slow and steady growth of viewership on YouTube, and general attendance has grown. We even see
I'm no longer writing for them, by the way.
You're not? Mm-mm. Those sons of bitches. Their loss.
It was a mutual decision. They needed weekly articles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Weekly articles while you're not getting paid worth a shit. Or not at all, technically.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah, we're seeing that slow growth.
No, they do have phenomenal content. Please do go and read their stuff.
I'm going to edit that last little nice part out. We'll see. But yeah, we got the slow growth of everywhere, with some exceptions. There was a very small turnout at Washington last weekend. Sky Blue.
Which is odd, because Washington have been killing it.
They were doing four for, or more, or five for a while, yeah.
Somebody who's done remarkably well and it's gone almost unnoticed is Boston has got a really good, fairly consistent now, larger numbers. And I mean, their stadium isn't as large as, you know, say, Orlando, and it's kind of been overshadowed. But Boston's numbers have been fairly good, even through the train wreck, which is this season.
Yeah, the shooting percentages and the everything is so bad. The goalkeeper injuries are having such a poor year, unfortunately.
There have been so many injuries in NWSL this year.
Absolutely.
We can go back to that when we talk about the letter.
Definitely, yeah. It was kind of weird where they talk about people like Merritt Paulson and the MLS. It seems like everyone wants to go the MLS route with growth, tie everything to orgs, or have maybe marketing deals like what Sky Blue tried to do with the Red Bulls a couple years ago. But I feel like that, the general growth would be good when we actually have the facilities, and you don't want to have smaller facilities setting the bar too low for standards of equipment, player care, etc.
Well, it can be done without, you know, official work together, because if you look at FC Casey and Sporting, they aren't owned by the same organization, but they have incredibly good working relationship, because they've realized, oh hey, it's to both of our benefit to promote soccer in the area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hey, don't they play, and I presume they do rent, but they play essentially in Sporting City's practice area, their practice field.
Yeah, they probably don't have much of a budget, but they're making great strides. And even with the smaller clubs, that could be, you would think, maybe Boston or Sky Blue would be someone that would tail off in a few years. But those are legacy clubs from either WUSA and or WPS days, and I don't feel it's necessarily fair to shove them out for the sake of progress.
Who's at the bottom in terms of attendance? I know it was pretty much Sky Blue and Western New York last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Sky Blue has done better this year, despite the fact that they still insist on marketing, you know, solely to
tweens,
which
Dan Laletta quoted a nice tweet earlier today, if I can find it here, talking about how a middle-aged woman said, you know, sometimes I wonder if they even want me as a fan with what little marketing is aimed at adults.
And, you know, there was a... To mention the Tumblr, there's somebody I follow who's actually an Everton fan. I haven't found them on Twitter yet. But they're also, you know, a Portland fan. They live in the area. And they mentioned that one of their absolutely favorite things to do is, you know, kind of people watch at Portland matches, because, I mean, I've seen it before. You get this, you know, like, this little, like, 70 or 80-year-old lady who's, you know, she's got her thorn scarf and she's shuddering as she gets her way back onto the mats. And then you've got, you know, the little 7-year-old boy who sits in front of me who flips off the ref violently every time they make a bad call.
Absolutely.
Actually, there was an interesting article in New York Times talking about the divide. And I mean, it's a pretty divisive article. It's the one about, you know,
white
there's
and
white
Hispanic.
And
yeah.
Latino. And I don't necessarily feel that there's that divide. But then again, I am not Latina or Latina. So I can't really speak to that.
Maxi Rodriguez wrote a Medium article. He's a former Soccer Gods writer who's sometimes on Howler, saying that he saw a lot of the claims were either without merit or just total bullshit.
Yeah, but people are overreacting in a sense, because there are certain things in U.S. soccer which need to be discussed. And I mean, I got shouted down because I have complained about this before, and I probably will again. Orlando City, Iron Lion firm. Now, I am English. There is one thing a football firm is, and that is organized crime masquerading as a supporters group. And I understand that a lot of people, you know, you take those words and you take them out of context. I got into a debate with somebody who is South American the other day because of the term ultra. In continental Europe, ultra can have good or negative connotations depending on how you look at it. In South America, ultra is what you call the hooligans. That's what you call the football firms.
Yeah.
But it's interesting always seeing the language and how it changes from supporter culture to supporter culture. But anyway, going back to that, what I was trying to say, I mean, Portland gets a lot of shtick for being, you know, oh, you're a white city, which there's a lot of truth to that, especially with, you know, increasing gentrification and things which come with the expansion of a city, because you can sell this lovely, nice little vegan boutique and yada yada. But especially with Thorns games, the affordability of the Thorns games makes it so that the people who go are going to be so much more diverse in age, in, you know, identification, and in, you know, culture.
It's a social experience for the same cost as a major running movie ticket, for crying out loud, at the season ticket price. It's amazing, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, that's some great points about context and connotation. And that's, I wonder where, when we're old, what ultra as a term will look like, if it would mean that you're a wussy suburban soccer person, or if it still means like you're a hard edge person, or, you know, throwing flares out in a Lithuanian second tier match, but
throwing flares into a trash can at one of those dumpsters on the way up to Seattle.
are you speaking from experience?
Yes, you went to Thorns away this season.
I didn't remember flares. I must not be hanging with the right people.
Oh. He threw one into the dumpster. Nobody heard this. This is not being talked about right now.
Yeah. But no, let's see, what was the next point on that article?
I've distracted you, haven't I?
That is true, but that's kind of goes to the territory of I ramble too.
Talking about the dangers of the MLS teams, because you saw it all the time. I mean, one of the best examples of this is Manchester United. The Sugars or Glazers or whoever is it the Glazers? I feel like that's their owner group. Lord Sugar is an entirely different person.
Well, yeah. Who comes in and do they get? Is it about bottom line dollar? Like, if the Whitecaps decide to have a women's team again, are they going to care enough? I think the article or another person mentioned Neymar's old club Santos outright got rid of their women's team his offer before he got sold.
So he could buy a gold iPhone case, and then he left the next season anyway because Barcelona came a knocking.
And shit, a club that big deciding
not to. When Southampton was dropped to the second league, they got rid of their women's, and actually what their women's team did, the women's team separated financially, so now Southampton Women and Girls is a separate women's club in Southampton. The only issue with that now is that one of the part of their deal with Under Armour is Under Armour has agreed to help them build up an FA-regulated women's academy, and Southampton will be going into women's soccer, which makes, I believe, Manchester United now the only BPL team without a women's side.
Yeah, and they have the biggest global brand, for fuck's sake.
But no, you know, we couldn't possibly, you know, increase spending in the academy and keep our women.
I would think... Drop, you know, selling off one more player, it could be enough to make your second or third tier. If you're not in the WSL yet, if you sell off a player or get an extra higher bid than you expected, drop all that money straight on the women's side, and they'll be happy for a season or two. Yeah. At least on the equipment side, maybe not obviously on the salary side.
Everton doesn't spend that much on their women, but they tend
they
to
used to care,
well.
But like everyone from Farrah Williams. At all. There are a lot of the major national team players spent a decent amount of time at Everton before they stopped giving a shit.
Yeah. Well, a lot of... Because Arsenal was one of the, you know, first clubs to get back into the women's side after the FA ban was lifted. If you look at it, almost all of England's national team at some point has played at Arsenal.
Yeah, they... And whether it's short contract or 7, 8, 10 years like Smith and... Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a half-decent segue to the fact that WSL will go to a fall season starting next season.
I saw that, which, you know, it will... I think that might encourage more English players, at least to... You know what I think we should do? In the W League, so in Australia's league, they have this thing called a guest player, which is sort of a tack-on player to your roster. They can play, I think it's something like only 7 games... for your team, but they can come in, they can play partial, a couple of games, they can't play more than, yeah, I think it's 7 games and 3 consecutive games.
Really, so, FIFA Ultimate Team.
Yeah. So they're not an additional person on the roster, but they're a separate subsection, and I think it would be nice if we could start doing that, especially if we're trying to build the NWSL up, because, I mean, look at the amount of attention and the amount of draw Henri brought when she came in.
Yeah. Having some, you know, it feels like a short-term but more concrete loan idea. But that would be a good way to gain entry for maybe a Brazilian or a Colombian that doesn't want to spend all of her off-season before she goes back to Germany or something. She can give it a taste here and see if she likes it.
And I feel like it also might encourage, you know, like Manchester City, whatever you want to say about them, they have... the organization has wholeheartedly thrown money behind their women's sides. I mean, there's also some dubious business dealings.
That's just classic football.
But, you know, they put their money, and which is why I'm surprised that New York City FC hasn't put in an offer for Sky Blue yet, because color-wise and everything-wise, they would work well. The only problem is, you know, Red Bull is the Jersey New York team.
True, yeah. That's a good question. What should become of Sky Blue? But yeah, Melbourne City having a, you know, Melbourne City's basically their whole season is different. So it would be
their
great
whole season is winter.
Two and a half seasons for their players to rotate to if they wanted to between WSL and whatnot.
And I mean, I think you'll see it increasingly. The NWSL had a short-term deal with the US soccer team where the stars had to play here. Mm-hmm. And that offer will either be rewritten or rechanged now. All those players will have more freedom to go where they like.
Yeah. Then regarding England going and changing their schedule, it's obviously not a really big worry because there's always enough pitches. You know, if Notts County can't play at Meadow Lane, maybe they'll go play at Nottingham or elsewhere. But there, in that NWSL 2.0 article, Randy Waldron was talking about the fact that extending the season for the national team's duties in Brazil, the Olympic break, means that some of those smaller teams using collegiate fields are possibly going to have to figure out how to share that, or if they can even afford extending that month's rent. And that's just...
And it's hard... I'm still surprised that Chicago hasn't seen their numbers increase since they moved to Toyota.
Yeah, they got a great product. Hard press and hard up top, they're doing fairly well.
And, I mean, people make the argument, oh, there's however many majors. I think it's six major sports if you include their women's basketball team as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's six major sports, not including the NWSL, in Chicago. And people make that argument a lot when you bring up Portland's attendance numbers. Oh, you know, they've only got a basketball team and then the MLS team and that's it. But Chicago also has a population which is four or five times bigger than the Portland metro area. So you're drawing from a much larger fan base as is, which I think can sometimes work against them. Because Portland's got, and I know I'm kind of tooting my own horn, playing my own band here, but Portland does. Portland is the perfect size city, as in it's small enough to still feel like a cohesive community, but large enough to draw in that attendance. I mean, I have, and so I will probably get angry messages now, but we love Rochester. I have never heard anybody say, oh yeah, I'm from Rochester, New York, you know, I'm so proud that this is my city, this is my town. And I mean, you do hear lots of people say that about...
They might say that when they're drunk at a Bills tailgate in Buffalo.
They might, and you do hear that sort of sentiment about DC, which, I mean, even though they're almost, what, an hour from DC,
mm-hmm.
the Spirit have done a great job of capitalizing, you know, at that, of that DC feel.
Yeah, you can, if you can't, you may not draw all the inner city wannabe weekend people, but you have an area that's, everyone commutes a long way and won't be that miff to be bringing the family or bringing a friend over that hour. 45-minute drive. They could even be coming from fucking Philadelphia if they're really excited.
Which is why Seattle confuses me so much, because, I mean, we rib Seattle a lot, but Seattle does have a great soccer culture.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some of the highest youth, you know, attendance in the league. They've got the Sounders, who, even though we fucking hate them, the Sounders, you know, get a large number of people. They show up and they're loud and they do the march. It's really, really sad to see what happens with the rain, especially with how their fan base is so divided. They've got, what, three or four fan groups who don't really communicate with one another.
They're kind of like their own cliques, you know, they're off in the corner drumming, or maybe they'll do that corner clap, but they don't... Social media presence is really bad for most of them, too.
With the exception of Sounders at Heart, generally puts on a good product. I think her name is Susie Rance or something on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you agree with her or not, she is probably, if you look up the rain, that's one of the people you will see who is consistently writing about them.
Oh, good. Yeah, that they could be so much. You know, they have an inner city location.
They've got a great product. They've got noticeable players. They've got a very strong sense of who they are. I mean, certain clubs, if you were to say, maybe, I don't know, Boston Breakers, to me, apart from heartbreak this season, I could not give you a core descriptor. I could not give you an identity that was the Boston Breakers, and that might be because they're so far away and I don't see it, but it could also be that it just doesn't exist. When you say Seattle Reign, people are going to have a very strong reaction to that, whether it's negative or positive.
Yeah.
They are,
you know, Solo, Harvey looking cranky all the time.
I'm
Supporter Shields. Yeah. They just need an overhaul. They need a drop. They should just sit in Tukwila for a year and then spend $10 million to clean up Memorial Stadium. And then, you know what? They probably have the second best venue in the whole
city. Because Memorial Stadium has a phenomenal location.
Yeah.
And, I mean, people can talk about it being a pain to get to in traffic-wise, but public transit isn't too far.
Not at
from
all.
Memorial. Which, you know, is another big thing that does draw people to Providence Park. Because, I mean, it's right on the MAX station. When you're going into Portland, you have to see Providence Park. There's not a choice. You will see it.
There's definitely something to be said for inner city and old school. When I first moved here, even before I even knew in 2013 that they had a women's team, I wanted to go see something at Providence Park. I went to a reserve game for the Timbers back when they still had those, just because sometimes the venue can be the initial draw.
Yeah.
To be, you know, if you're from a small area, you just don't know that. But that's...
And that's hard when you've got clubs playing in stadiums which aren't their own, especially if it's a stadium, you know, with the strong identity to say the college team, because Benedictine Field.
Yeah.
Where Red Stars used to play. It's got a very strong association with that field. It's just not with the Chicago Red Stars. It's with the college.
Yeah, and it's a lot to overcome. One thing I kind of think of that sometimes I'll watch an ASL game and it'll be like the Cosmos playing at Hofstra's Field in Hempstead. And it's like, you know what? They're just almost, the fan base there is almost ravenous enough to where you could create a duality that this is Hofstra's Field and the Cosmos' field. If the venue is a draw, but you don't feel like you're in a venue, and let's say you're having a really shitty pro referee ref a really bad 0-0 or 1-1 game, then are you sure you're watching professional soccer?
And especially, you know, when you can see the college hash marks, which have been scrubbed out hastily before the match.
Yeah, all the hashes for the football field, yeah.
Another thing with that is a lot of people, when they're talking about women's soccer, they get angry at the idea that that you should market it to the kids. And I think, to a certain extent, you should keep that market. Yes, please do market to the kids. Let the little girls and the little boys know that, hey, there's these women, these female players, and they are fucking fantastic. But at the same time, you need to find a way to include that whilst bringing in, you know, the supporters groups there. That's the term which I can use without upsetting people, because Ultra, it does have some connotations. Yeah. And the supporters group, and see, the thing is, another problem with those slightly smaller venues is you don't necessarily have the space for the people, you know, going, take a bong hit, take a bong hit, take a bong hit, referee. And you've got Susan and her two kids who are in from the suburbs on the other side who are absolutely, you know, scandalized and mortified. Which is something nice, because, I mean, even,
yeah, that dichotomy,
yeah,
absolutely.
Even if you go to a Timbers game, if you go to a Timbers game and sit, say, Key Bank or South Deck, dependent on the game, you can take in that great fan atmosphere without being engaged yourself. And if you're far away enough, you can kind of ignore the vulgar gestures and things, because
the accidental flipping off of the FCKC team because you didn't you thought they were mocking you, yeah.
Who did that?
They said that in the post game account. Yeah, well, I know I did. Rachel was flipping off absolutely in 107.
Oh, I thought it was sarcastic at the time, but that's one of the things which cracks me up, because talking about rivalries, somebody somebody last year was saying, like, oh, you know, we should have an FCKC Portland rivalry. But if that rivalry were to exist, I think it would be much more like, you know, the Timbers and the Whitecaps, you know, a friendly rivalry, whereas you've got Seattle and Portland, which is, fuck you guys, yeah, we hope you lose, kind of
thing. Hide safety pins in your arm, in your wristbands, yeah.
Yeah.
That is something I would like to see. They're like Waldrum was also talking about in the interview, having a larger schedule, and who knows what the expansion of this team, the league is going to be. But I really have enjoyed this year having the every team has the one team they play twice home, twice road. As a baseball fan, you have under 68 game seasons, but you're playing four different teams 19 times. I actually really love unbalanced schedules. While it doesn't necessarily mean that the team with the best record is the best, it really engenders the fierce knowledge of another team for fans, the fierce rivalry, the shit talking, the big away fan groups going together.
Well, I think that's the perfect marriage of the so-called American sports culture and the English sports culture, because that's something which America, I think, has been searching for a long time.
Yeah.
Because the US is the US. And the thing is, when soccer fans emulate European, Latin American, African, whatever fan culture you want to prescribe, when they emulate that, they get told, you're just a cheap ripoff, you know, why would we bother watching you when we can pay attention to the original?
Absolutely.
And now they do get a lot of crap when they create their own things, because that's not how you fan. But I think there's a perfect chance for this new form of fan culture, which marries, you know, the American playoff style, which is, you know, it's more about excitement rather than about the best overall team, because it's about the best team on the day of, instead of the most consistent team, which kind of typifies English culture versus American culture anyway.
You're summing up exactly. Take the elements and work them to yourself, because you don't have to be perfectly emulating. Yeah. Use an unbalanced schedule. Keep playoffs because Americans have always loved that. Those would be great additions. Beyond that, I mean, we could go through maybe a litany of ideas, but that's why I really prefer knowing and talking with sports people, soccer people that are also sports people.
Yeah.
Because they know it, because you have to know America to know American sports to know how soccer will grow.
And despite my accent and despite what you may assume, my first sport was actually American football. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals. I wanted to be Larry Fitzgerald at one point when I grew up.
Yep.
And still one of my favorite sports personalities overall. And there's a certain aspect to American football which you don't get from, say, rugby, even if it is league versus nation rugby. You don't get it from cricket.
Yeah. And in their own way, the Cardinals had their own travails where they were using a collegiate stadium for most of their career and having bad draws. But then they invested, they had better product on the field, and you have a dedicated fan base behind it.
Yeah. Bird Nation, I think it is. Bird Gang.
Is that their hashtag?
Yes.
Yeah, nation's overused. The Red Sox can pretty much hold on to that in the U.S., and that should just be about kaput. But yeah. Those are elements that NWSL should try to emulate. Obviously, money seems to be the preeminent thing, but that always goes back to what we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes on marketing.
Another fun thing which I think might be with culture is FC Dallas, their women's team. They play in the WPSL. What Houston did recently, they played a friendly match against the FC Dallas women, which, you know, helped promote this idea of, you know, a Texas derby, a Texas rivalry.
They're even hosted through their main FC Dallas website.
Yep.
Not much besides basic information and schedule, but yeah. Maybe they'll be one of the next expansion draws.
And even if they're not, playing other local teams, playing people like this, which I think would be quite a good idea if they want to build a community sense of culture. And they don't necessarily have to play us in the middle. They can play it, you know, like we had our preseason tourney. It would be phenomenal to see, you know, people playing their local other women's sides, even if they're not professional, for their tourneys.
Yeah, and that leads me straight into thinking about the old W League teams that are still alive playing in whatever that new, I think it's the same league, the WPSL.
Yeah.
You know, you don't always have to be in Tucson every year. Maybe you can play a friendly in Santa Monica if the Blue Wave or whatever is still around, or, you know, foster that and get people interested, or even play one on where LA Galaxy 2 on their field or something.
And I would love, you know, to see in a decade, that's another nice thing. I don't know if anybody apart from me really pays attention to La Liga Femenino, which is really weird because Femenino is masculinized, even though it's a female league.
Is that the suffix that fucks it up?
Maybe. But it's the women's league in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And as of last year, La Liga has promised to put in 4 million euro into the women's game. And they will now be airing at least, I think it's 2 games a week. So
yeah, they also had that Facebook Live airing of the Bilbao Madrid game last summer. That was cool.
And they were playing occasional games on YouTube because I was able to watch Barcelona and Valencia play one another. And it was actually really awful because there was one physio between both of the teams, and one of Barcelona's players got injured and she had to be carried off by her teammates.
Oh Jesus.
Yeah.
Ay, caramba.
Yeah, but I would love to see, you know, not now, obviously, but in a decade or two, I would love to start seeing us play international preseason games.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we were all jealous with the Arsenal matchup here a couple months ago against the rain.
Harvey knows how to get things moving, and I think one of the reasons that Seattle is able to have such a great thing with such, you know, austere measures is because she instills, you know, that sense of community, that sense of identity, and she is got the name already, and she's got the draw to pull people, and I think she sees something that she can create in Seattle, and I don't think she's quite there yet, but I think her fan base really need to start helping her out.
Absolutely. Would you figure her if it would ever interest her? Ever figure her for a decent NWSL commissioner?
I would love to see somebody like Laura Harvey, even if it's not necessarily, you know, Harvey herself. she has the heart for women's soccer. She knows what she's talking about. I believe she was a player before she dealt with an injury. Not for long, obviously, because she's only, what, 32?
Oh, goodness. Wow.
Yeah. But she knows what it's like. She's got a good relationship with her players, and she knows how to manage and how to make things work. And she actually really, really cares about women's soccer. She cares about the NWSL. She cares about her players.
Yeah, we still have yet to see that about Plush. She was a former executive with the Rapids and had a stupid marketing group before getting his hire. I don't know.
And even if, you know, he could hop on Twitter once a week and answer maybe one question, it would be a big thing. Because that's thing. Whether you hate Merritt Paulson or love Merritt Paulson, he's there, he's answering, he interacts with the fans, and he does his best to try and communicate. And that goes a long, long way. I mean, another person who's absolutely fantastic with it, I can't remember his name, but Chicago's owner.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago's owner. He follows the fans on Twitter. He tries to talk to people about women's soccer, and he's there, and he's available. He's an ascertainable person to see. I don't know how much financially he's got. I don't know how much he does, but you can see that he's there and he cares, which means a lot.
Care. Everyone can. There's obviously different avenues between Merritt Paulson, who's kind of a weird aggro pseudo Gen Xer, who's almost too in your face on Twitter, but he deletes it.
Apparently, he knows how to sing "Waterfalls" by TLC.
Oh,
that was an interesting conversation.
Random thought relating to the FC Dallas head coach. Ben Waldrum. Oh, that last name sure rings a bell with that whole Houston situation. It's his...
How common is that last name? That last name cannot be that common.
No, I found his bio says, you know, recruiting director at Notre Dame. So obviously it's Randy's kid.
And also Trinidad and Togo assistant.
Tobago. Trinidad and Toboggan.
I'm sorry, Zane. I have a friend who's from Trinidad, and I always pronounce it incorrectly, and I feel awful. It's like when people say Norfolk.
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 Sure. Why not?
One thing that freaks me out. I love how shortened everything is for multiple syllables in England. Like there's a
Worcestershire.
Woosty Lesty. I had started, I love the lower leagues of English football, and I started dumpster diving through them. And then...
have you reached Colchester United yet?
I don't know. Fuck them. I actually don't have a League One side. Oh. I'm a Notts County guy for League Two.
He's not even... We're not even League One. We're like second... I think we're League Two.
I think you dropped out this year.
League Two,
League Two, yeah. But like, there was a thing... There's a Cheltenham town, I think, in the National League, mm-hmm. the fifth tier or sixth tier, if they're mm-hmm. in the north or south.
So, the one just above the regionals, or regionals, the first tier of
the
regionals?
The National League is what they used to call the conference.
Okay.
So Cheltenham town, blah, blah, blah. I'd heard a couple weeks later, there was an accident here in Portland at a Cheltenham Street. It's like, no, it's Cheltenham, damn it!
The one thing that... What? Okay, Massachusetts...
How would you do that in England?
Massachusetts. But no, the
Massachusetts.
One what am I thinking of? The college town in Massachusetts. Because in the East Coast they pronounce things the English
Cambridge.
Way. Yeah, Cambridge, like and not Cambridge, but there's another one. And on the East Coast they pronounce things the English way more often than not, and then you get people over here like, how do you spell Hillsborough?
No. Double O-R-O. That's fucking weird. But yeah. What the fuck were we talking about? Something where Andy Waldrum.
Andy Waldrum and this.
It's a very stream of consciousness episode tonight, but I'm actually enjoying it. What did you think of, as I do a terrible segue, we haven't really touched on it entirely, Hope Solo and her open goddamn letter?
Hope, darling, sweetie, my dear.
Our dearest, leastest, favoritest.
She's dangerous because she's so easy to love to hate that you forget about very valid things she's done, which you should be critical of. But no, her open letter. Loved the fact that people spoke up. she spoke up. She's got a lot of things. Love the fact that she drew information. There's certain things which she needs to be realistic about. And certain things... I mean, I know Portland and Seattle are rivals. And Portland is not, you know, perfect. I mean, until this year, we did not have a specific Thorns dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
A fitting room. Now, when T2 play at Providence Park, they've got to use the Thorns room.
Yeah. That's also a treatise on the U.S. Yeah. men's development, mm-hmm. which we'll never not talk about.
There were rumors at one point that the Thorns were getting their own, you know, training facilities. I believe Kristen asked Merritt about that, and he said something was still in the works. But the Thorns arguably have access to the nicest practice field. And the comments she made about Portland just seemed petty and out of place. I mean, the whole thing about the furry convention being held in the hotel. Nobody decides what's going on in the hotel. And from the picture she posted, I know vaguely which hotel she's at. And it's a decent hotel. And especially, you know, she commented on the fact that a lot of teams only travel in the day before.
Mm-hmm.
But she...
What I'll go into is she had some really great pictures, some really damning evidence, talking about not getting the right replica kits, so they're like pinning it back like it's a photo, like you do on a photo shoot for a modeling line or something, or injury issues or cleats melting. But then the tone's wrong and she mixes it up. She talks about how there's no FIFA adopted rules and this and that about not enough stuff. So she's like she's really bad at peppering because she brings in hard good points. Even if they aren't perfectly, even if they're not worded well, and then she drops the bullet point about a furry convention in Portland. Now, I researched this because I had remembered this. A fucking Major League Baseball team had shared a hotel with a furry convention in 2011.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with that. And
shit gets weird in major metropolitan areas.
She also pointed out, you know, that how close it was to the airport, and then in the next point, she mentions that, you know, a lot of teams only travel in the night of. They stay in the hotel. They stop off in the hotel. And then they go straight to the game. Right. You want a hotel which is close to the airport. Which, you know, is going to cut down on your traveling time. Especially if you've just flown in from, say, Orlando or something.
Yeah. Get out, stretch, and crash.
She also failed to mention, you know, Memorial Stadium. Putting it nicely, it is pretty poor standards for a high school pitch. It is AstroTurf. I'm fairly certain it's a year or two old at this point. There have been 2 non-contact injuries this year alone on the field. And they've improved the bathrooms this year. They have finally scrubbed off the profanity which was on the walls. And I believe it no longer floods when it rains.
If a Skid Row crack den could play professional soccer, that's Memorial Stadium. At least if you are drunk and walk into the bathrooms, absolutely. Or try to not stumble down the stairs, or look at their awful vending areas in the main concourse, which is basically an open air area with 30-foot ceilings.
They have added the beer garden, which I think is a nice attempt, even if it's inside a chain link fence.
Yeah, it was. Georgetown Brewery does some good stuff. Yeah. I heard people saying the ciders were good, but so much work needs to be done here.
So much work. And there's a problem when, you know, the traveling fans come marching in and you're still getting people stopping you, asking you, oh, who are you here for? And when you say, oh, the Thorns first rain game, and people go, who are literally standing right next to Memorial Stadium are going, who are the rain? We've never heard of them before. I didn't realize Seattle had a women's team. And these are... and I've spoken to some of these people. Some of them, you know, are tourists, so they're going to see the cool museum thing. But a lot of those people live in the Portland metro area. And I mean, I think I heard 1 or 2 people even go, oh, we'll have to check out a game sometime. Last away match, we had a group of little girls who were standing in front of us, and God bless their hearts, they were trying to out-chant the Riveters. And after they finished, you know, their mother or father asked, you know, oh, so you guys are pretty cool. Do we have anything like that? And, you know, oh, yeah, there's the Royal Guard and there's somebody else.
We keep, in some ways, getting back to marketing and this stuff. But, like, you're talking about in front of a... right in front of the stadium, yeah. It'd be like, I'm here for the EMP, and there's that big building over there with the creepy-looking cement walls. Yeah. Like, I'm showing her a picture now that we took on the walk between the concourses of the EMP and the stadium.
Me.
Yep, there's you and your little beanie. You have these giant cement walls. I mean, for God's sake, spend $5,000 and plaster some nice, pretty... they do good marketing work on their website or their emails. Make big posters on those otherwise unattended walls saying... come see our national team players. We've got, here's our schedule in this section. And that, they have the best goddamn, they practically have the best goddamn, like, uniform color scheme, for fuck's sake. Just flash that jersey, those, you know, the platinum blonde of Rapinoe on in the jerseys with the schedule. And somebody like, maybe. That's good enough sometimes.
Yeah. And I keep on going back to marketing because it's been, I think, on my mind a lot recently, because it's one of the easiest ways to spend a little money to earn a lot, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And a lot of it is, if you build pride in a product, if you build interest, you do not have to advertise anywhere near as much. And I mean, obviously, you're going to constantly advertise your brand because you always want to expand your brand. And however much we love football, however much stadiums are churches, at the end of the day, they are still a brand. It's the way capitalism in general works. If you can put money and a name behind pride, you can then sell it to other people and you can make people feel a part of something, which is, you know, something that the Riveters do a great job of. It's something that the Spirit Squadron, oh my god. I mean, if we want to use an example, which isn't Portland, and we get used in as an example all the time, so it's kind of unfair. I mean, the Spirit Squadron, they traveled all the way, and I mean, it was a 2-3 hour drive, but they were present at the NWSL draft, and they were there, they were chanting, they scarfed their new players.
Yeah.
And, I mean, nobody is expecting necessarily the huge boom and the huge numbers, but the passion, the pride, that, I mean, Chicago, the Red Stars, they might not have that many fans, but you know they're there. They're present.
Yeah, they're vocal and they're around.
And that was something, it was so great for the season opener match to, you know, see people in Orlando Pride jerseys and to hear, you know, oh my gosh, I was so excited. I flew in to see the first match because there was no way I could miss it.
Yeah. And even, in some ways what MLS and Fox Sports has done with people like Jimmy Conway or Rachel Bonetta is you get maybe a personality that fits a certain mindset or a certain type of people, like maybe us or our friends in our in our little section, and maybe that'll get people interested. Or even what I loved was LAFC. You know, they're a weird thing and they want to get their name out there, but they had nothing but a press conference that they were going to exist, and then they started building their brand with a fantastic fucking logo that people like. I don't give a shit about the Galaxy. I don't really care about almost any LA team, but I want that fucking hat. If you have nothing, start somewhere, and that's in the initial marketing is how the logo looks. That's how the brand has to originate.
And if you can get people behind the name before you've actually put the product out, then they're so much more likely to support the product once it exists. I mean, there's very few brands I'm loyal to, and you can probably ascertain which brands they are.
You can say them if you want.
The first one, obviously, is, and I mean, if you know me, you've probably heard me complain about this at one point, especially now, but Mac products. I am a Mac user. I am one of those obnoxious Mac users. I love Macs. Or, like, for instance, if you know me, if you speak to me, you will find out very quickly that I am a Thorns fan and that I like soccer. And you will find out very, very quickly that in terms of running apparel, I favor Nike.
Yeah, and those are big branding things. Like, one of your teams being Arsenal, one thing I think about with a lot of English clubs is they have a crest, and oftentimes they friggin' stick to it, hell and high water, into eternity.
Yeah.
where, you know, you see some teams that have just some really awful, putrid, ugly ones.
How many times has Arsenal changed the crest in, you know, the past 20, 25, 30 years? I think we've gone through two or three crests. I mean, obviously all of them have been the canon, mm-hmm. and the canon's very recognisable. But if you look at, say, the kits which you associate with Highbury, with, you know, the gold and the maroon and the lovely ones with the collars and things, and then you associate with them, and I mean, Nike's soccer kit can be gorgeous or they can be ugly, but I really, really love, and it was the first year I actually actively followed soccer, it's the 2013, 2014, or Arsenal kits. It's, yeah, those ones with the blue band, the navy, and the red band on the sleeves.
Yeah, the double band. Yeah, they also did those, a similar fashion for Everton, yeah. If they care to make their templates good, they're good. But yeah, branding obviously is hugely important.
See.
But yeah, like the Gunners, the newest, I don't, looking back on older pictures,
see, one, two,
some of
three.
Their crests are shit. I mean, the simple gun that they had for decades is fine, but the current one's nice. And I feel like going back to the rain, their logo might be the best in the league. I mean, Thorns is a lot of good time. They let a local guy build it, and it's Thorns, very nice. But, you know, start with a brand.
Yeah. And Thorns, I mean, I think our crest also fits very well with our city. It lends itself very easily to minimalistic designs, and it lends itself very easily to, you know, that vintage kind of look, that vintage style, which is what I think the Thorns have done partially this year. And I mean, a lot of our older fans actually hate it, but I absolutely love the floral theme and the floral vibe we've got this year.
It is nice in their materials, yeah.
And I think the Reigns crest, once again, it signifies who they are. They are fighters, they are warriors, they are tough, they are Seattle Reign. Yeah. Fortune favors the bold, is that their thing?
Yes.
Yes. And, I mean, they've done an excellent job of branding themselves.
Yeah, and minimalism is very good, especially if you're scaling. Like, you know, if you have a big ornate details on your crest, it's fine if it's a 5-inch sticker or a 3-inch crest, but how are people going to differentiate it if they're scrolling through their Twitter feed and they've got 100 pixels to look at? How is that brand evoked quickly?
That's the only problem I have with the Dash logo. I associate Dash very strongly with orange, and then their crest that doesn't have as much orange on it necessarily.
Yeah, heavy white. Yeah,
it's heavy white and grey. So they've got, you know, the orange, which is a great colour. It's an eye-catching colour. When you're looking for it, you can find it easily, but their crest doesn't necessarily
It's kind of, I've always thought of it very generic in terms of script, the font they use. Everyone has to throw a dumb soccer ball on it. Obviously, they came into the league very fast, and they should be commended for how they've worked, but it's just kind of blasé.
And especially with Dash, like, I understand that Dash is kind of an abstract concept, so it might be harder to, you know, brand with that, which is another thing. Like, I think the Pride did a fairly good job. I mean, they might get called Nipple FC, but hell, at least you know what it
is. Orlando Geyser Domes is what I call them, yeah. Looks like Old Fucking Faithful. So, that, yeah.
We got distracted again, didn't we?
I'm trying to think. What team would go? What should go immediately for a new logo overhaul? We obviously, Dash has to...
The Breakers.
Yeah, it does. It still looks. You see that on the old 0203 jerseys.
What does it look like?
Pull this up.
I can't even think of the Breakers logo off my head. Yeah, it's the simple. Once again, it looks more like a high school.
Looks like something that would be in an old W League West Coast team, evoking of waves and shit.
Yeah.
On of course, another old school looking soccer ball. You know what'd be really cool if it's a Nike sponsored team. Uh-huh. Maybe every year you replace that soccer ball with what the current Catalyst or Ordem ball looks like. That'd be kind of fun.
You could also, I mean, you know the famous Japanese picture, the famous, you know, painting of the waves.
Mm-hmm.
Have a stylized logo and have that style wave with some form of slanting calligraphy font.
That's a good idea. Oh my gosh, there used to be a United States Football League team called the Breakers, too. Oh, they weren't even original in the name. Oh, God. Okay. Well, yeah. Well, with small marketing departments, sometimes comes people that aren't properly trained to make things.
Boston as a city has a very good identity.
Yeah.
And I do think they've tried to lock into that with the, what's it called, their like collegiate team. They've got a team where the kids at all the local colleges can play for like the Boston Breakers collegiate thing. It's kind of like an academy, only not quite really.
All of their colleges in that area, whether it's BU or BC, are all really good, top mm-hmm. to bottom men's and women's squads.
Yeah.
So that's obviously something good to pull on. DC does a similar thing with, you know, the Georgetowns and George Washington's. But yeah, don't know on that side. But yeah, Boston's kind of a Portland-ish town. It's got its own. Oh my gosh, those are some terrible old school Breakers USFL jerseys. Sorry.
Yeah, but look, Portland Breakers.
We are going down the dumpster dives. Oh, because they moved four times.
Because they were originally the Boston Breakers, then they were the New Orleans Breakers, and then they were the Portland Breakers. This is USFL, so American football.
Do you know who destroyed the USFL by trying to make them go toe-to-toe with the NFL in the same winter schedule?
No.
Donald fucking Trump.
Thanks, Trump.
Yeah, they were a very viable April to summer league team, but yeah, org, but yeah.
I like the Atlas AFL.
That's another league. That's
I know.
In comparison to second-tier American tackle football leagues, yeah, I have to say, and I should give more kudos to the NWSL. We haven't had any teams move. We haven't had half of the league shut down like the WNBA. Oh God, yeah, they're doing okay. They're doing okay.
They're surviving, but I mean, we should start to look to thrive. I mean,
are they planning for the next five?
Because I think I asked. That's another thing. The way the USSF invests in the NWSL, they are not looking as if they're a long-term product. They're looking as if, you know,
absolutely.
Oh, we're going to keep this to hold us over until the next, you know, Olympic cycle, and then we'll find something else to do.
Yeah.
But, which is actually, I'm hoping that now that they've got the academies, you know, how the USSF is investing in more women's academies. They were 25, and then I believe they added 32 in the tier below.
They might have, yeah.
Yeah. So another thing with that is obviously it might give them more incentive to continue investing in the clubs, because as long as you've got, you know, an end goal, a name, an idea to work towards, you'll get more people playing and more people invested. Like, for instance, take Arsenal. I mean, you look at somebody like Rachel Yankee. Mm-hmm. Rachel Yankee, who, you know, she also does this lovely little program over in England, which has introduced her to a whole host of the young people. It's called Footy Pups, and it's essentially a kids program for kids as young as 2 and kids to like 4 who have
I know the face. Okay.
Yeah, that's Rachel Yankee. He's looking her up. But essentially, Footy Pups is a show which is aimed, you know, to introduce soccer to kiddos.
That's awesome.
It's a CBeebies program, which will mean nothing to you Americans.
Is that a network?
There's CBBC, which is children's BBC, and CBeebies is like the babiest one of it. So it's part of the BBC
network.
They're
the Muppet Babies of BBC.
But Yankee is, I believe she was one of the ones who used to, you know, shave her hair, cut her hair short to play football with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And Arsenal was a name which meant something to her.
Yeah, wow, since 05.
Yeah. And she was at, I think we loaned her to Notts County.
Yeah, this year it looks like.
Yeah. Because she is starting to get older. How old is she now?
They said born in 79, yeah, 36.
Yeah, she's 36. And I mean, you've got Kelly Smith. And you're starting to get women's teams who have legends who have made their name with them retiring. I mean, Kelly Smith, she decided to come back to Arsenal, and she decided to stay at Arsenal the second time she came, partially because Arsenal helped her deal with her alcoholism.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, which is another entire topic. But
wouldn't though the WSL be better off maybe having these maybe these, what often you see a lot of times in the lower leagues is you'll have like an out of, you know, big name guy. I'm thinking of off the top of my head, out of Bioic and Finois just keep rolling through division or tier league two teams. Wouldn't it be better to have Smith at like Tottenham in the third tier, the NPSL, to get, I know it's an evil, not nasty thought to have an Arsenal savior spend a year or two at Tottenham, but to actually get a fan base on the women's side doing that kind of thing, would that be something worthy of encouragement?
Not necessarily Smith at this time, because Smith is retirement age almost. She's a player coach at this point. Mm-hmm. She's what Angua did last year.
Okay.
But, no, having younger names, you know, like, you know, Morgan went to Orlando and Orlando was able to build their band around her, doing things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Carly Lloyd and Morgan Bryan. Morgan Bryan.
Sound like you're trying to say Mönchengladbach, but you're shortening up a syllable.
Mönchengladbach.
Even I got that one.
Mm. Hannah got mad at me because I'm like, I don't want to pronounce the entire thing. I'm going to say it wrong. And she's like, you better. But having names like that, that's another thing, thinking of the fact that Angua was really willing to retire and come back to the Thorns to be our goalkeeping coach is a massive step, because I mean, the best goalkeeper in the world, I mean, the only person to, the only goalkeeper to ever win the ball, golden fucking ball.
Ballon d'Or.
The only goalkeeper to ever win, you know, the women's equivalent, but the only women's player to ever win player of the year, the only goalkeeper to ever keep a clean sheet for an entire World Cup. I mean, the list goes on, and because of the way the German league is structured, she's also had a more productive club career than any other goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got her at the end of her seasons, but she was still phenomenal.
Yeah, still spry.
Yep, still can put a dent in a car. But
yeah, like you're talking about on Twitter the other day, I think after the Timbers game, saying, what would Gleason do if he had an actual goalkeeping coach? I'm throwing a couple words in there myself, but yeah, that's the how big she is for women's sports, alone what she could do for other people.
There's this great little snippet, I think it was the year she won Women's Player of the Year, and she was speaking to Manuel Neuer, who obviously, you know, is a big thing, and I can't remember.
I hear he's okay, I don't know who he is, though.
The question was, I can't remember, it was either something like, you know, oh, what are you going to do when you retire, or what's next, or, you know, who are you speaking to, Neuer? And Neuer said, she's going to become my goalkeeping coach, I want her teaching me, you know, she is massive, and I think sometimes...
Bees knees.
She
is king shit of fuck mountain.
Yeah, well, also another thing is, there's a sort of air of American superiority when it comes to Rosso and American fans. And I think it's partially because Rosso is so insular and it's so small that it's easy to pretend as if there aren't other leagues. You know, if you really wanted to, you could pay attention to NWSL and feasibly act as if it's the only professional women's league out there, which is, I think, something Hope said correctly in her article, which is, you know, if we're going to treat our players this way, we might as well accept that, you know, we are still at the level of the FAWSL, which until a couple years ago was a semi-professional league instead of a professional league.
Yeah, sometimes I feel U.S. soccer on the women's side's culture is patting itself on the back because it was there first. But it was there first because they were the first to semi-give a shit.
Well, also, another thing is...
And we're kind of coattailing on that for 25 years in some ways.
And another thing which... Without getting into certain parts of this discussion, the whole argument of, you know, academy system, a proper academy system, not, you know, oh, I play club soccer two times a week and I also play for my school, but proper academy soccer, that versus collegiate soccer is the reason that US men's soccer isn't as advanced as, you know, international soccer, but because the women's soccer did not have any form of academy system, the collegiate system, which was equal to the men's in certain places, especially when the women did well collegiately, that allowed the women to do so much better because they at least had some form of youth development in progress.
Yeah. And the early growth of soccer is because, you know, Anson Dorrance is throwing these 14, 15-year-olds straight into the top tier of the system.
Yeah.
And that, I suppose, in its own way, solved what is now broken, I think, in men's and women's sides, where I think there's so many opinions I would agree with, and I'm just going to throw mine out there, but if we had a solution, I think we can work with the collegiate system if, as long as we still build up 7 to 18 year olds and get them the footwork needed to, and then they can hone their discipline at the collegiate level or go straight to the national team.
NCAA is not going to let itself get rid of in certain sports. I mean, take, say, basketball. Basketball at this point, whilst you could feasibly have basketball on an academy system, that's never the way it would work now, because another part I was mentioning, you know, about American sports culture, another huge part of your sports culture, which you don't have in other parts of the world, is the collegiate sports system. I mean, with the exception of maybe rowing, which isn't a professional sport outside of college, you don't really have like, oh yes, I go to Oxford and I play for the cricket team.
Yeah.
You don't have that. The only sport you have that for is rowing, and outside of the Olympics, which, you know, is under 23, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, under 23, you don't really have rowing as a professional sport, which is paid attention to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is a huge... America is arguably one of the biggest sports nations in the world, because you don't only have your professional leagues you pay attention to with such rabid obsession, as you know.
Yeah, you're yelling at a 19-year-old quarterback in Starksville, Mississippi when he throws an interception. And certain things, I don't know if it's creating a solution or just something, but like basketball, men's and women's sides... they almost created their own solutions in that development up to the college level, where they have summer league AAU teams. And oftentimes you'll also see, even at the high school level, you'll see kids transfer from their high schools in the final years to be at a big program.
Minor league baseball is another good example of it.
Yeah. It's about how are you dealing with the interim until you work within what's already regimented and will not be destroyed. We cannot destroy NCAA soccer.
No. And
how can we work with it?
And I mean, that's going slightly off topic. We have to say this quietly so that Crazy Ted doesn't hear us. But the reason
soccer reform.
The reason that promotion relegation is not currently a viable option in the US is because you don't have any proper academy system, so you can't throw the kids in as young. And having a viable promotion relegation assumes that people are going to aggressively care about their lower sports team and about those kids who are playing for
fans,
Like,
I think before I had to block a Westervelt clone, I was basically saying the same thing. Let's solve the development before we figure out what's going on with ProRel, for shit's sake.
Like, if you want ProRel in 30 years, and that's really the way America goes, I don't think it will be, because the playoffs is such a strong part of your sports culture. And it's great, because it's vibrant, it's beautiful, and if you do it right, because it's different to the way Europe does things, you're going to get European fans paying attention to American soccer just as rapidly as they do, you know, say, the people in England who pay attention to La Liga.
Yeah.
Because it's new, it's different, it's vibrant, and it's got the element of excitement in it.
Yeah, but Garbert, I feel, was going just so wrong, and just the way the league works with its stupid salary cap. You know, you have guys like, you win the title, and you have to get rid of your probably third or fourth best playmaker. And you don't have an you keep growing. Yeah, fuck, I love you, Rudy. You keep bloating up this league because you enjoy the expansion fees, but you don't have a base of American or Canadian players to bring in. The Mexicans will stick to their better league. And you're just bringing in 29-year-old Ecuadorians and the like from South America.
Why did the NWSL fail with the agreement with the Mexican national team? It's because, I mean, yes, there's no professional women's league in Mexico, but it is highly competitive and it's more physical and they could get more play, and because of the way US soccer works and the way they were not valuing their Latina players,
I feel like that's discussion. a soccer culture versus so much of American sports is like not teaching so much as fucking discipline. And it just drives me nuts, because I think that's half of the reason why the Mexican sides white Mexican women may not necessarily want to switch. Maybe they're at Elche or something, but they want to be closer to home, but then they don't want to deal with some asshole former NC2A taskmaster that's only going to let them see 2 minutes.
And even if, you know, say they are, you know, a dual citizen, they know that in the instant, even if they're a good player, the instant they contact USSF, they're going to get told, oh, don't you think your style, don't you think your place would suit the Mexican national team better? And it's happened before. There's one or two players who have publicly come out and said, you know, I feel discriminated against.
Huerta has, I saw in an article in the last 9 to 15 months saying that she's very interested in, I think she's a U21-ish for Mexico, but she'd love to come back, and if she could get a decent chance at a camp for America, that's also saying a lot.
Yeah.
You have it so many times in league soccer and English football where you have talent, but you're not getting the chances, so you drop down, but I guess in women's soccer, you really don't have those fucking options. What do? You go to fucking Norway? Right.
Oh, you're going to have to take a drink or make a check or something. But the reason is thinking to parallel to the men's game, Mustafi, there was a huge big thing because, you know, obviously he won the under 17 thing, World Cup with Germany. And then it was, oh, you know, they've got those great centre-backs already, you know, don't you think he would do better, you know, playing for Albania? Is he going to play for Albania? You know, he's got a lot of pride for his Albanian roots, you know, that was his first language, despite the fact he was born in Germany, and he chose to take the chance for Germany. And they're not even being given that chance to choose, even if they are very good players. They're being told from the get-go, oh, you have this other option, we're going to stick with these people.
Give them let them have the options.
Yeah.
If you've got a, you know, if you've got a Huerta, you know, it's like if they call you and you are at the U21 level, but you know, play, see what it's like. You have until your designation on the full national team as a player to pick and choose. I like that FIFA finally opened that up a few years ago. Yeah, give them the options. That is basically everything we've basically talked about. You either give the fans the option to be more interested in what this product is in this league. You give the players the option to grow better as a youth player, grow better in the national system. It's just that the top has to give a shit. We have to relegate Jeff Plush. I'm pretty
promotion relegation for America. Jeff Plush edition.
Let's have a boxing match between him and Don Garber and see who wins and loses. I mean, oh my god, that would be fun.
Oh my god, yeah, I would. Do you want to talk about MLS briefly and the Timbers?
The Draw City USC. I don't know what the word. Gleason's doing pretty good. I mean, the Chins Could Kill Bruce Campbell lookalike is doing solid.
Which one's that?
You know who Bruce Campbell is?
No.
Army of Darkness?
No.
Evil Dead?
No.
Burn Notice?
No.
Young people suck, man.
I'm being discriminated against for my age.
Yes,
do you hear that? But no, he is doing well. I mean, the one thing which people are constantly talking about, it says, oh, his distribution. Yeah, but his distribution's not as good as Quares says. And you know how, I've noticed, if Ridgewell is on the pitch, 9 times out of 10, will pass it to Ridgewell, and Ridgewell will feed the ball forward.
What's distribution when you're kind of playing in a, would you say Porter is a play from the back kind of coach? Yeah. So what's the point of the distribution only really means a shit otherwise if you're long ball or counterattack.
Well, another thing is you look at it, and I mean, Gleason has been improving dramatically in his distribution since he's come up to the Timbers, and I think partially that's knowing where the players are, because obviously you play with a certain players, and even if you're practicing with them, things are going to change in the game when they've got the gameplay on. But he's, this season, overall, he's got a 57% distribution accuracy. Quasi's accuracy for last year was only 61%. Yeah. So it's not that big of a difference, and I mean,
experience difference, yeah.
In the if we want to talk about professional, because of his time, he was a starting goalkeeper in New Zealand, and obviously that's a considerably smaller league.
I consider nothing, no member of the Oceania Football Association to be that big enough.
Yeah, but no, Quaresi in the 7 games he played this season before he unfortunately hurt his finger, his distribution was only 59% accuracy, and I think it's partially because I built up the fact that
the whole team was fucking up hardcore in that whole first month and a half.
I built up
can't
the
can't throw it all on him.
Yeah, I built up the fact that save accuracy in terms of saves per goal, Gleeson has on average like 3.8 saves per goal, and Quaresi has 1.6 saves per goal. And somebody built up the argument that, our defense fell apart when Quaresi left, and that's partially to do with leadership and partially to do with, the fact that our defense got injured at the same time Quaresi was injured, so, more shots got through, so Gleeson was saving some easier shots. But even if we're going to assume that, the two out of the almost 4 shots he saved were easier shots, he's still saving more shots, and he's managed to get clean sheets with a worse back line. And that's not to say that, Quaresi isn't a phenomenal little player, because, Quaresi is a phenomenal player. Quaresi is considerably better at saving penalties, for example. Mm-hmm. That's something Gleeson needs to work on. Gleeson needs to work on some forms of confidence, which, confidence largely comes with playing time mm-hmm. and knowledge of your teammates, which, I love youth. I enjoy watching young players play, and I will arguably take some, shakiness to see a young player play rather than stick with somebody who, whilst being experienced, they're solid, but they're nothing phenomenal. I'd much rather see a young, unexperienced player with more talent play.
Yeah,
than
absolutely.
See a solid, older player play.
That's what's been irritating with not seeing it. If you had PA on the other side of Powell consistently, that would be something to be excited about, even with a couple of really, really old center backs, because they are for the future. They're both under 25.
Yeah.
But, Porter, I don't know. I'm seeing too much Grabovoi and Taylor and
Porter
roster machinations.
What Porter did, which allowed us to win with our older players, is, he does enjoy slowing the game when he can. He enjoys pulling it back and allowing the older players who have a good read of the game to pass it to our forwards who are faster and younger, and then our younger, faster forwards slot it through, and you've got somebody like Valeri who is creative enough to find a way to marry that fast offense with, our solid centre-backs.
Mm-hmm. But we are so, we're doing, he has the roster built to still be good now, but I pulled him up because I was thinking, Nick Beisler from the draft last year is the only guy I can think of that would eventually replace Ridgewell and Borchers. And they are what is the age between them? 34, 30, they're about 33,
Ridgewell
34.
Ridgewell is 31, 32, and Borchers is 34, I want to say.
Those both sound close enough to be accurate for me.
Ridgewell has said that he's actually looking to stay slightly longer because he'd originally signed the, 2-year contract and has said, I think I'm probably only going to be here. And my friend sent me an article today.
Okay, Ridgewell 31, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Borchers just turned 35 in April,
The whole
on death watch there.
The whole reason the BPL got rid of Ridgewell is with his knee issue.
He was no
longer consistently fit enough to deal with, the constant play of the BPL. And the BPL,
arguably, it's kind of funny they replace him with McCauley, who's 5 years his senior.
Yeah. Okay. Here's, I'm not certain what article this is from. I'm going to ask Hannah when I can, but there's a little thing she got. Yet, in speaking to the 31-year-old, it's clear where he sees his future. I've got 6 months left on my deal, he said. When I moved, I had my family back home, and it wasn't something I could look at long-term because I had to think about the kids. So it was a 2-year deal, and as long as my kids were fine with it and my family were fine with it, we could look to extend it. And that's what we're trying to do now. We're in negotiations with the club at the minute, and we can hopefully sort things out and keep me here for another couple of years. And then it goes on, the article goes on to say that speaking to Porter was also eager to see Ridgewell stay. And Ridgewell gets a lot of stick film fans, a lot of people go, oh, he's just here, you know, to retire. He's not got his heart in it. But I think he has got the heart in it, him, and he wants to play, but physically he can only play a certain amount. So, I mean, yeah, in a year or two, we can't have Ridgewell as, you know, our only solid quarterback.
Is a super sub worth a DP slot?
Well, no, we could... I'm not saying DP. I'm saying we play him maybe one game a week and we bring in two other centre-backs, you know, so one can play, say, Open Cup games and other things without, you know, our defence falling to pieces. We need to bring somebody in. I mean, ideally, we would have them now so they could learn under Borchers and take Borchers' place when he stepped out. Ridgewell would start doing and then start pulling back, doing what Arsenal needs to do. In a year or two, yes, Mertesacker is no longer going to be fit to play as much as Mertesacker plays now. Now we've got Gabriel Paulista. Gabriel Paulista.
Red card machine.
Hey, I love him. But no.
He is not a pretty man, though.
No, he's not pretty. I'm not saying he's pretty. He's kind
of... Not pretty. Lots of red cards. So that's...
Not that many, not that many red cards. Not that many red cards. He got one or two. And one of those was because Diego Costa is a shithead. Okay.
Yeah.
And he overreacted. Which, I mean, Paulista should not have reacted to what Costa did.
Well, if you're in a bullpen, don't stare too long at the bull. You can't just say, just get gored and say, well, you know, it's a bull. It's like, you're in there, you got to figure out how the fuck to unfuck the situation.
Yeah, but who's the bull in that situation, Costa or Paulista? But no, we've
got... I have a lot of respect for Diego Costa because of the turn he pulled on Vertonghen to get the assist into Hazard in that lovely 2-2 draw at Stamford Bridge. So I'm giving him like a good 2-game pass going into the new season.
No, I am not giving him any passes. Okay.
That was a great Monday
night. I was
night.
In Valencia last September, when I was in Valencia, I had been out clubbing the night before, the only night I went clubbing.
And I also like Atletico. So
I walked the 5 miles back from the club to the hostel because I didn't realise that their trains stopped running at like 11 o'clock at night, even during weekends. So I ended up walking back from the club. I wasn't even going to go to the club in the first place. I got invited to a birthday party with some Italians. Oi, mate, pay attention. But no, I know... The whole thing. And I mean, I'd already watched Valencia lose to Zenit earlier on, which, fuck Axel Witsel, fuck Hulk. But if they can play dirty, they'll do it. And they were playing dirty. He plays for Belgium.
Yeah, he's been in the rumour mill for Everton for like a fucking month and nothing's happened.
But, so you know... I got up. The first thing I did when I got up that morning was go straight down to the Irish pub and watch Arsenal versus Chelsea. I had a pint for breakfast, and
look at you, while being all grown up-ish.
And it hit the point, and I think, and that was the double red card game because Santi Cazorla got sent off and Gabriel Paulista got sent off. And I think, I can't remember what Costa did, but I slammed down my drink and I stood up and I screamed something at the television and it was silent in the pub for 1 or 2 seconds and then somebody else went, I feel the same way.
Was that the game where Per got the first red card because he stopped the breakaway?
No, he didn't get a red card.
Okay.
There were two red cards and it was...
That was the other, Paulista, that must have been the home game then.
Paulista and Cazorla.
Oh, Arsenal.
We love you, Arsenal. Oh, yes, we do. We love you, Arsenal. We do. Oh, Arsenal. We love you. Boom!
Well, I think that probably will mark the end of this stream of consciousness endeavor. Thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome.
You can always get the episodes in the show notes at withonions.com. Don't forget to follow Gwen on Twitter at...
Gwynnepeg, which is GWYNNIEPEG.
Thank you very much. Follow me at Michael L. White if you care to follow the official account at Two Dudes One Ball. And send hate mail to Ryan at RyanNBA. Yeah, we'll definitely
tell
change
him
the podcast.
Tell him shit.
Yeah, he's his absence from the podcast since the early part of May is very Spursy.
And with that, thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Worldwide. Becky G. Copa America. Con la mano para arriba, dale. Con la mano para arriba, dale. Con la mano para arriba, dale. It's not how you fall. It's how you get back up. I'm ready for whatever for show. Come on, Becky G, let's go. Esto para la gente en el barrio, la gente en la lucha, el mundo entero. Yo sé que me escuchan. Pon la bandera.